Thanks. Appreciate it. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it. Well, good morning, everybody. Nice and early. Great to be here. I appreciate that, Chris, very much. Thanks for the kind introduction. Well, I am excited to be here this morning. I know it's early, but I hope that what I share with you will either inspire you or challenge you or encourage you. And let me talk about that for just a minute. The slide that's up on the screen, sorry, first slide there, Love Works. That is the name of the book, but as you look at those words, you probably have one of two reactions to it. Either you get it immediately, you say, you know, I get that. I know that as a human being, we're called to love others, and it works everywhere. And what I'm going to say in the next half hour or so, it's going to be encouraging to you. You're going to feel you have permission to lead with love, and that's good. But I'm guessing that there's a lot of you who have the opposite reaction. You're a little bit cynical about it. You know, your hands are a little bit crossed, or your hearts are a little bit crossed because you're thinking, yeah, love works. Well, Joel doesn't have my boss, or Joel doesn't work with the people I work with, or Joel doesn't have my spouse or my kids, because this is obviously not just a principle of leadership, it's a principle about life. But what's provocative about the question, does love work or not, is provocative because it's not talked about as a leadership principle. And that's the journey of my life in discovering that it is a leadership principle. And it's a very successful one. It works. And it works in the home. It works in your family. It works in church. But it also works Monday through Friday. And it took me a long time to figure that out. So if you're a little cynical right now and you're here kind of for the free breakfast or because somebody dragged you here, just bear with me because I was just like you. I have come through, as Chris said in his introduction, I've come through 20 years being in, I think, the most competitive industry in the world, which is the automotive industry. Because there are barriers of entry, but anybody in the world competes in it. And just as the Americans get good, then the Japanese got good, and then the Koreans, and now the Chinese, it's relentless. And I know real estate's relentless too, and it's tough. They're all tough industries. But just bear with me, because if you're a little cynical, I just ask that you hear my story, and I hope and I pray that you'll leave here in a few minutes either being encouraged or challenged to lead in a different way. But to do that and kind of get through my own story, I do want to start with where I grew up. This is, because I think if you hear a little bit of my story, it gives you context for how far I've come from what I grew up with to learn about love working in business. So this is the home I grew up in, actually. This is Battle Creek, Michigan. And when people hear in an introduction, you know, anybody can sound really nice and good in a two-minute introduction, but I went to two private schools, so people assume I grew up with a silver spoon or just kind of had things laid out for me and had a pretty simple or easy life. And I didn't. My father was a failed entrepreneur. He had a tractor dealership that didn't make it. He really struggled. It was the wrong brand. It was the Oliver brand, which probably none of you have heard of. That was part of the problem. Should have been John Deere. But my mother told me at his funeral that he made about $50 a week for about a five-year period as that dealership was going down. So $50 a week, that's $2,500 a year. And even in the mid-60s, that's not very much money. So in my life, even though I had a very loving family, my parents were great, everything was about money. And all the fights were about money. All the conversations were about money. Every time my mother bought something, she got the 20-minute grilling. Why'd you buy it? How much did it cost? Why did we need it? The boys don't really need that. And it was difficult. And so I grew up not so sure that God would always provide. And I know that's not right, and I'm not proud of that, but I grew up with a fueled ambition to not have what I grew up with. And I'm not proud of that. But that was the track I was on. And so my choices were really about how do I make sure I don't end up financially like my father did. Because my father was a hard worker, and he was a smart man, and I didn't get it, and it didn't seem fair to me. So I had that track, and I had that ambition. But then when I was 16 years old, I went to a Fellowship of Christian Athletes camp, and I had been to church some. My parents went to church, but I didn't get the whole thing. And as a 16-year-old, though, I went to Fellowship of Christian Athletes camp, and it was there that I was presented with the basic gospel message, which many of you have heard, that Jesus came on this earth, incarnate of God. He was created by God. He was part God. And he died for all of our sins. And then he resurrected on the third day and is with God in heaven. And that sounded interesting to me. You know, I wondered about it. But what impressed me was the people I met. They had a character, and they had a calmness, and they had a peace that I didn't have. I was going down that driven track. I was just so competitive and so driven. And then I saw these people at this FCA camp that had so much peace. And they were great athletes too. And Roger Staubach spoke, and it really impacted me. And so that started this whole second journey of wondering how do I implement this Christian faith in my life. And I decided, I accepted Christ at that meeting, and I believed in it. I went through a little bit of an intellectual challenge for a while, figuring it all out, but what really impacted me is that there's no doubt, there's no factual doubt that Jesus lived on this earth. Other historians have written about him. Roman historian Tacitus wrote about Jesus and his movement. The Jewish historian Flavius Josephus wrote about him and his movement, that he claimed to be the Messiah. He claimed to be the Son of God. And then as I researched it through books and other literature, almost all of the disciples who were eyewitnesses with Jesus and lived with him and wrote about him, they died martyrs' deaths claiming that they saw Jesus resurrected from the dead. And that really impacted me because men or women, but men generically, they don't die for a lie that they know is a lie. There's a lot of terrorists or crazy people out there who die for things that they think are the truth. But people don't die for lies that they know are lies. And the disciples did that, and that was incredibly impactful to me. And I saw the impact that Jesus had in so many people's life on earth. So I started this journey of ambition, which wasn't, I don't think, of God, and then going down, how do I live up my Christian faith? And so I went on through life, and as Chris mentioned in the introduction, I'm going to grab a little water. As he went through the introduction, I had a nice career in the auto industry, went to Harvard Business School, then went to Saturn, and that was relentless. You talk about a startup being difficult. We went from zero sales to $5 billion in 3.5 years. We went from zero dealerships to 350. And if you remember Saturn back in the mid-80s, early 90s, it broke through the car industry. It was the big thing. Number one car in the small market. No hassle selling, and it was nonstop. So I was going down that path and that success, ambition path. That was good, and it was hard work, and it was fun. And then because of the success of Saturn, we went, myself and a few others from Saturn, we went to Saab, North America. And I was given the CEO job of Saab, North America, and I was only 35. That was one of the youngest people in the GM system that ever got to that kind of level. And it was mostly because they wanted Saturn's success at Saab. Because Saab had a great car. Anybody who's driven a Saab, it is a great car. But it had a terrible dealer network and terrible marketing. And Saturn was really good at both. So I did that. And we had a really good turnaround. So I'm going down that ambition track. But at the time, you would think, at 35, running Saab North America, you would think, wow, I'm achieving what I had intended and get away from that money drain that I lived in growing up. You would think that I would feel content and happy, but all that time, all the pressures of relentless travel, relentless hours, my family was stressing over all the hours. I really was struggling with how do I live out this faith? And then I got one of those classic corporate promotions where they take away, they fire three people internationally, and they gave me Asia, all of Asia. Anybody travel to Asia? I just talked to Leo Wells. He's going to Russia, so he knows international travel. It's a killer. So they gave me China, all of Asia, Australia, and South America with no new people. So, because, you know, cost cutting. And then it just got worse. And my life started melting down. I was traveling 80% of the time. And just started burning out and really hit bottom. My marriage was in difficulty. I really was struggling with, there just has to be a better way. I saw no model of the type of leadership that I wanted to aspire to, at least I didn't, in the auto industry that I was in. I'm not saying all the auto industry is that way, but my experience in it was not very positive. And I knew there had to be a better way to lead, because if I felt this way as CEO of Saab North America and felt so empty inside, and so relentless of the pursuit of more and more and more, I knew there had to be more, because deep down inside, my faith wanted more. I wanted to live out what I was reading about in the Bible as I'm going down that track too. And what I read about was a Jesus who was caring and loving and looked into people's souls and gave them most what they needed. And I knew there had to be a better way to lead. And luckily for me, I got a phone call while I was still in the auto industry that really changed my life. And it really did change my life. That phone call came from a man named Jack Hirschend, who's in the screen right now. He's on the left-hand side. He's the owner and founder of Hirschend Family Entertainment. His brother Pete is there, and their wives Jody and Sherry. But you can just tell by looking at Jack on the left. He's just a fine, fine man. Well, I had been on the board of Hirschend Family Entertainment for about 3 years, just a board member. Car guy on the board of the largest privately held theme park company in America. And as Chris said, we do run Stone Mountain here. We don't own it, but we run it for the state. Dollywood, partner with Dolly Parton. She's great, by the way. Very smart. Don't let her blonde hair and act fool you. She's an incredibly bright lady. Great to work with. Great business partner. And we've been partnered with her for 27 years, and then a lot of stuff in Branson, Missouri. Really fun industry. So Jack calls me, and he says, I want you to be non-executive chairman of our company. And for 40 years, Jack had been the only leader of that company. For 40 years, one family, one leader. And he asked me to be non-executive chairman. And there's no other way for me to explain it that that is a God thing. And whether you believe in that or not, for me, it was a God thing. Because I was so down and I was so disenchanted by what I was seeing. And I had this ambition, but I also had my Christian faith that was very important to me. And I wanted to know how to live it out. And I know that a lot, I don't know where you are in this room. Some of you are Christians, some of you are not. Some of you are searching. But I know there are some of you sitting in those chairs that feel the same way I do. You know there has to be a better way than the way you're living your life, the way you're leading other people, because of the examples that you've been shown in your life. And Jack enticed me, because I have to say, the non-executive chairman post was not full-time. It was just the chairman. It wasn't CEO. So it only paid about one-third of what I was making in the car industry. So given I was on that ambition track and the fears I had that I wouldn't have enough, for me, it was a really big decision. And now that I'm CEO and some of the money stuff's fine now, I don't want to give you a false sense of martyrdom, but at that moment in time, leaving the car industry and the position I was to come with a theme park company at one-third the pay just shows how desperate I was to figure out how to integrate a faith that's supposedly important to me to the work world. And I am so glad I made that decision, because I've been there now for 15 years, including my board time, 10 years as CEO. And I can tell you definitively, because I've been through the good, the bad, the ugly, that there is a better way to lead. And there's a better way to integrate a faith in this Monday through Friday workplace. And that's leading with love. And that's what I've written about, and that's what I speak about when I get the opportunity, because it's so important to me, and it's been a life journey for me. Now, if some of you are still a little bit crossed right now, you're still thinking, yeah, I'm still not buying this because of your own life experiences, and I understand that. Could be because you're thinking of love like I used to think of love. And you're thinking of it like most Americans think of love. You're thinking of it as a romantic love, the kind of love that Hollywood teaches us, right? They spend billions of dollars on that kind of love. And it's eros. There's actually four Greek words for love, where the Americans have one word for love. And that's the whole problem. And the Bible was written in Greek originally, and so it expresses a whole different kind of love. But we think of it as American love. We think of it as romance. It's not. There's four Greek words for love, and the first one is eros. That's romance. That's where the word erotic comes from. And clearly, that's not the right kind of love for business. It's really not the right kind of love to base a long-term relationship on. Because eros is dependent on the environment, right? You got to have the nice music and the soft candlelight and the wine and create the eros environment. But it's not long-lasting. The second kind of love is philos. Philos is the kind of love, your brotherly love. You hang out with your buddies or your girlfriends, boyfriends. You go have a drink together. That's philos love. The city of Philadelphia is named after philos. Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love. Now, anybody been to Philadelphia? Is that not the city of brotherly love? I mean, there has never been a city more misnamed than Philadelphia. I mean, Phillies fans, for crying out loud. I mean, didn't they throw snowballs at Santa Claus, the Eagles game? I mean, these people, I call it the city of brotherly shove, is what I call Philadelphia. But you can't work with your family or your friends, so philos is good. Then there's storae love, which is the love of a parent, very special love. And anybody who is a parent out there, I know a lot of you are, you know how special storae love is. But you can't work with family and friends all the time. So the final kind of love that I'm talking about is agape love. That's a verb. And Chris said that in introduction, love the verb. So please, I don't mean to dwell on it, but it's a big issue, because you get blockage because you think of love as an emotion. It's not. It's a verb. It's how we behave. And when the Bible talks about love, they're talking about agape love. It's an unconditional love. And in fact, another question, I put it up on the screen, what is love, I talked about. But the second one, why don't we love? You think about this. for those who may be Christians, those who may be not. If you do have faith, Jesus was asked by the leaders of that day, what's the number one commandment? And anybody who's familiar with the Bible knows that Jesus said, the number one commandment is to love God and love others. So if we're to do what Jesus commands us to do, we're to love others. And he didn't say just love your family. He didn't say just love your friends. It means we have to love everybody. And that's really, really hard. So I would say if you're here and you have a faith, learning and figuring out how to love God and love your fellow man Monday through Friday, every single day, is the most important thing you can possibly do. If our faith is that important to us, that is the most important thing we can do. But even if you're here and you don't have a Christian faith, I would argue as a business person, it also makes good business sense, right? I mean, if I ask any of you what makes a great real estate firm, you'd say all about having the right people on the team. Got to have the right people. Well, if you have the right people and they're working together well, how does that happen? It happens using the attributes of love to get people to work together. We may not call it love, but those are the very same attributes that make them work together. So I would argue that no matter what your faith is, leading with love can be the right thing for you. And I'd be remiss if I didn't say that Hirsch Entertainment, we not only do great in a guest score and our employee scores, we have great financial results. Through this whole recession and 10-year history, since I've been there anyway, we've had double-digit returns. We're almost double the size in EBITDA than we were 10 years ago. So it, for us, it works financially as well. It's not the reason we do it. It's a byproduct. But don't think that we are just soft and fuzzy and don't hit the numbers, because we do, but it happens to work. So why love is Jesus' number one commandment, but it's also a good business principle. And what is love? It's agape love. So how I thought maybe before I go through a few of the words to give you a feel for it, I'd tell you where we get all the words from. We actually define love in our company from 1 Corinthians 13. We go to the Bible, and many of you are familiar with that verse. It was written by Paul, the apostle, and he wrote it in Greek, and he said, love is patient, love is kind, and it's used in a lot of weddings, but it was not romantic love that he was writing about. He used agape when he wrote about it. So we paraphrased 1 Corinthians 13 as a company, and we came up with these eight words. You can just look at the screen. Patient, kind, trusting, unselfish, being truthful, being forgiving, and being dedicated. So believe it or not, we actually teach our leadership to treat each other this way. And if they treat each other with love, we know they'll love on the frontline employees, and the employees will love on our guests. If you've been to any of our properties, for the most part, we pull it off pretty well. It's taken us years at Stone Mountain Park to get there, because we took it over Stone Mountain Park, we had the worst guest and employee scores in our network of properties. But after 8 years or so, they're almost near the top. So Stone Mountain's coming along, but it's taken a while. So let me just, for the rest of the time we have together, if you're still not sure about integrating your faith into the business world, or not sure about this love works, let me give you just a couple examples to walk through, because I know you'll walk out of here with some practical ways to do it and some encouraging ways to do it. The first word I want to hit is not the first one, patient. I'm going to go in the middle with unselfish. The definition is think of yourself less. It's not thinking less of yourself. It's not a false humility. You're a leader. You have to lead. But the thing is thinking of yourself less. Now, one thing we do in our company, and I'm not suggesting this is right for all of you, but we've copied it from Walmart and Home Depot here in Atlanta, some really big companies. We actually have a foundation called Share It Forward. That's what SIF stands for. that we, it starts with our employees' unselfishness. They have to go first. They give that first dollar. And some of them are working from paycheck to paycheck, just like my father did. And then the company matches it dollar for dollar. And we use 100% of those resources to help our employees in financial need. And it has incredible results. And instead of me telling you all about the stories we and the programs we have, I do want to show just a quick 3-minute video from Undercover Boss, because it's so reflective of what happens with that program. This is the logo, and Chris mentioned it. I had to laugh when he was telling you about Undercover Boss, because I'm thinking, probably not too many people in this room watch Undercover Boss, and you probably don't recognize me, and that's fine. Although, I just read, this is pretty funny, that Undercover Boss just got an Emmy for the very best reality television show, which is a really low bar. I mean, there's like Dirt, and then there's, you know, reality television. And then there's the real Emmys and the Oscars, so I got a kick out of that, which I guess that means that I'm also an Emmy Award-winning actor, so thank you. So I got that going for me, which is nice for any Caddyshack fans. So let's just watch this video, and you'll see what happens.
Joel Manby, CEO of Hirsch & Family Entertainment, is undercover in his own company. His coworkers think he's being filmed for a documentary about someone trying out entry-level jobs.
Morning, Albert.
Hey.
Hey. Morning. This is John Briggs.
John, nice to meet you.
He's
going to
be working with
nice
you today.
Come over here, John. We'll get you on a turnstile.
Okay, let's do it.
This is all about your first impressions, so it's really a fun experience. I grew up at this park. I've been on this park since I was 2 years old. I have all these ideas about theme parks and stuff. It's not just a place I work, it's my passion. I have to work to go to school, and I'm trying to go to school for work. I'm just doing 10 hours a semester, and then working 40 plus hours a week also.
Wow. What do you think the ideal job is here?
I would like to eventually be a CEO of Hirsch & Properties.
Who's in that job now?
Joel Manby is our CEO.
Well, I have a lot of emotion for Albert. I really respect his passion and energy.
That's great, because you can channel that.
And it definitely makes me want to try to help in some way.
My name's Richard.
Hi, Richard.
I'm John.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
So just open it up. Turn the black part.
Whoa.
Just keep it keen tight, and when I release the pressure, just take that loose.
Okay.
I'm pulling it apart now.
Okay.
I'm trying. We have Richard.
Uh-oh.
I think my hose is leaking.
Come back behind you here.
Whoa, sorry, man. Don't get my boss wet on the first
you,
day.
It's already got me wet.
Whoops.
You might just stay behind me.
Where do you live?
I live in Galena because 2 years ago we lost our house in a flood. It was rough because we actually lived in a pop-up camper at first. We didn't have a place to go right then. So we still got quite a bit of work to do.
You're a hardworking man. I was overwhelmed hearing that. His whole home being wiped out from a flood. Everything is gone, and he's still working his way through that. Now it's time for me to reveal my true identity to each of the people I worked with over the past week.
Well, I'm actually Joel Manby, and I'm CEO of Hirsch & Entertainment.
No. That was you, okay?
Man.
So
that was a pretty good...
You got me.
Briggs.
Richard, you are a very special man, and you have a really special heart.
Well, thank you.
And we're very lucky to have a man like you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
That story about losing your home really touched me. And what I'd like to do is, for your home, allocate the full $10,000 of catastrophic funds that we have available to help you redo your house.
You got me good.
You've inspired me to start a scholarship program. You're gonna get to go to school full time. So you don't have to work all day. You don't have to go to school at night. We're gonna actually pay you your 40 hours a week salary while you go to school. We need a lot of people like you with your kind of passion, your kind of enthusiasm.
First thing I'm calling is my parents. I'm gonna be jumping up and down while I'm telling them, and I'm gonna hear my dad. I know he's gonna be so proud.
Thank you. I've seen that video a lot, and it's still touching to me because it's really clear that caring for people and love can work in a for-profit work environment. And one thing that's important for me that you know is these weren't one-off awards. I was very committed to not anoint someone just because they happened to have worked with me. And sometimes that happens on that show, and I don't like it. Nothing I gave was any different than our normal program out of Share It Forward. And that, the next morning after that program came on, we sent an email to all 10,000 of our employees saying, anybody who qualifies can apply for these programs. We have the scholarship program. We have catastrophic aid that Richard got. We also have a single parent program that's now actually a family program. If they make under a certain percentage of the poverty level, they can get a stipend to help their children with medical care and so forth if they don't have insurance. We pay for marital counseling if a couple is having difficulty. We pay for financial counseling if they're coming to Share It Forward too often to help them with some of the Dave Ramsey stuff. So it's an incredible program. We have virtually, I mean, compared to other theme park companies, we have no turnover in comparison. It's very low turnover. We have very enthused employees, and I think you feel it and you see it, and that's part of the reason why. But that's being unselfish. But I know all of you can't do that. You can't have a program like that. So how do you walk out of here with this principle? I know for myself as a leader, trying to be unselfish, I've personally, I'm not speaking for you, I've had two different reactions. I either open up my heart because Jesus said to love others and care about others, but then I get overwhelmed with all the need, all the requests, all the pain. You see it everywhere, and you work with people in pain every single day. So you don't have enough money, and you don't have enough time to deal with all of it, right? Or you go down the other path, and I'm a tough businessman, and all I have to hit the numbers, and you know what, I can't be concerned with all that, and then you close your heart to everything, which I did for a lot of years in the auto industry, and that's not good either. That's not a very aspiring way to lead. So I heard a sermon once from my pastor, a man, very talented man named Andy Stanley, and he had the same issue as a pastor of a church that they have thousands of members, and he was getting asked to do everything, right? Funerals and hospitals. Just think of the things he gets asked to do. How do you say no to somebody who's dying in a hospital? But he has a principle: do for one what you wish you could do for everyone. Now think about that. Do for one what you wish you could do for everyone. It's just a great, great principle. So for me, I chose Albert and Richard and one other lady that was on that program, and I stayed with them. Those were my three people. I stayed with them until I made sure all their needs were met. So as I'm saying that, there's probably someone's coming to your mind. Who do you need to be unselfish with? So whoever's coming into your mind for whatever reason, write that name down. Keep that name in your heart. That's who you're supposed to be unselfish with. It may not be money. It may be your time. It may be mentoring somebody in your office to make them a better leader. It's not just about you. It's about thinking of yourself less. It might be however, whatever you're gifted with. Be unselfish with it. And that's the principle of unselfishness. Do for one what you wish you could do for everyone. The second word that I just want to hit is kind. Now, that, as you can see, the definition is showing encouragement and enthusiasm. And this is a word, as we teach our leaders, is often misunderstood. It's not being nice all the time. I know we can't be nice all the time. We're leading for-profit enterprises. We have to hit the bottom line. We sometimes have to discipline people or even let people go. We have to have tough conversations. But encouraging people and being enthusiastic about what you're doing is so critical. And I know you know that, but think about encouragement for a minute. How many of you, and let me see a show of hands on this, how many of you in your personal life have had too much encouragement? Let me see, show of hands. I don't see a whole lot of hands going up, and I never have anytime I happen to ask that question. Why is that? I don't really know why that is. I think it's the human spirit. We're so bent on moving forward, and especially all you in this room are A drivers, but the human spirit doesn't tend to encourage very much. But we all need it. And I have learned so much from Jack Hershend at Hershend Family Entertainment about how to encourage other people. He's incredible at it. And he happens to use the handwritten note in a masterful way, that simple handwritten note. And I have a picture of one of his notes. I know you can't read it. I'll read it to you. But that's an example. And he writes many of these every day. And there's a story behind this note that I just have to tell you. You might notice there's several names who it's addressed to. It's actually addressed to my family. And make a long story short, Six Flags was going through Chapter 11, bankruptcy, and they had fired their CEO. They were looking for a new CEO, and the bondholders came to our office to talk about a management deal. Well, after that meeting was over, they actually came to my office privately. They said, you know, we really don't want a management contract with your company. We really want you to come and run Six Flags out of Chapter 11. And they gave me a huge number. It was way more than double what I was making, a lot of stock options, blah, blah, blah. But given my background of growing up the way I did, I was attracted to it. I had to look at it. So I go home that night, and literally this letter is on the table that very night. And my wife read it to me when I got to the dinner table. And it says, Dear Marky, Lauren, Aaron, Jesse, and Anna. Those are our four girls. Over the past 2 days, I had the privilege of watching your dad provide the most awesome leadership experience to our president's team, which is like our top 30 employees. It was the kind of leadership that leads to actions pleasing to Jesus. I'm so grateful you chose to share him with us. I'm so grateful you chose to share him with us. Appreciatively, Jack. So what do you think my wife said about that job offer? So that little letter cost me a lot of money. But the last time I made a decision for money, it was a disaster. So we didn't take it, obviously. And I'm glad I stayed where I was. But the power, that note was so impactful to my wife that there's no way I was going to leave that company. Because she remembered the auto industry. She remembered the bosses I had coming up through the auto industry. There's never been someone like Jack who I worked for because he was still on the board at that time. So, it may not be a handwritten note. You have to have your own style, but think about how you can encourage other people. And one principle that this is so simple, but it's so powerful. Jack spends the first 20 minutes of every single day. He comes into his office before he gets into the email and all the crud that we all deal with every day. He writes handwritten notes before he starts his day. He thinks about yesterday and who he can thank for what he saw, what he can reinforce in the behaviors he saw yesterday. And it's not just, and I'll tell you, those letters are like gold anywhere you see them in our company. People hang them on their walls. They put them in scrapbooks. I put mine in a scrapbook. But what it does for me when I do it, it puts me in a great frame of mind for the whole day. It puts me in a positive spirit. I'm not so negative about things that are going on. And so if you need a dose of encouragement, start the day by encouraging others, and it's going to transform the way you lead. I promise you. It's just simple, but it's powerful. But it may not be letter writing that you do. It may be whatever you're comfortable with, words of praise, gifts, but kindness is about encouragement and enthusiasm. I'm only going to do two more for sake of time, but the next word I want to hit is truthful, defining reality. This is a really, really important one, because sometimes I think the common problem when we talk about leading with love or being loving in the workplace is we're not truthful with each other, and we tend to be too nice. So this one's critical, because we have to define reality. We have to tell people where they stand. And there's a lot of different ways to go about it. I don't have time to go into it, but a couple things that are helpful to me is it's my job as a leader to create an environment where truth can be told. And it's your job as a leader to create an environment where truth can be told. And if you're leading with power and if you're leading with fear, you will not get the truth. And a couple simple rules I have, which probably a lot of you have: I don't shoot the messenger. If they come in with bad news, I welcome it. I thank them for it. In meetings, I try to speak last, because I know if I speak first, the conversation tends to go towards my opinion, and that's not good. It gets frustrated people. Some people want to hear me speak faster. I try to speak last. But I try to create that environment that I know some of my team's here today, and I know that they will tell me the truth, and they have permission to tell me the truth, including about myself. And one of the tools we have to do that, again, these are not complicated, but we have a tool, excuse me, that we use. Anytime we're going to have a difficult conversation, we write down these three phrases: same as, more of, less of. And we just write, when we're going to talk and have a difficult conversation, look, you're doing great on some things, keep doing it. You need to improve here, or you need to do more of something else. But the difficult one is usually what you need to do less of. You need to stop doing it now, or you're going to lose your job, or you're going to be demoted, or put someplace, whatever the retribution is. That's being truthful. But what's really important, if you turn that tool on yourself and get the truth, and as you, any of you know, a lot of you lead companies, you lead your departments, it's hard to get the truth. The higher you go up, the less people tell you the truth. And I use this tool twice now with Saab and at Hirschen with my own team. So I have 10 direct reports. We went off-site, and we had 10 flip charts put up, actually 11, including mine. And the 10 people came up to my flip chart, and they wrote on my flip chart what I needed to do, less of, more of, same as. And then we all did everybody. And then we sat in a room, and we talked about the results. And it was incredibly intimidating and incredibly therapeutic, too. I mean, we got at some really deep issues and some really important issues. And then we walked out with contracts of how are we going to change based on what came out of these discussions. And it's a powerful example of being truthful in business and in Monday through Friday work life. And so far, I haven't talked at all about this in personal life. But this all works in personal life, your personal life too, obviously. These are life principles, as I said earlier. But just think about doing this exercise with your spouse or doing it with your children. I did it with my daughter, Jessie, and I was shocked by what I got. You know, it was so different than what I anticipated she needed from me or what she wanted me to stop doing. That it was really, it took me back. So think about, how are you going to be truthful with others? Somebody's in your mind right now. Somebody you need to be truthful with. Somebody you need to have a difficult conversation with. That's part of leading with love. It may be in your family, it may be in your office, but that's part of being a loving leader, is to be truthful with them. And it's not always easy. So That's truthfulness. The last one I want to go through, and then I'll wrap it up, is being dedicated. Stick to your values in all circumstances. And I don't mean sticking to just the values of love per se or the values of hitting your numbers. How I think about this is think about do goals versus be goals. And this is something Jack taught me that literally transformed my life. Do versus be. And it's a very simple concept, but it's powerful. All of you are A drivers. You want to tackle the next hill. You're really focused on your do goals. You got to hit certain profit margins. You got to build certain buildings, lease them out, do whatever you do in your real estate company. I have to hit attendance goals and profit goals. We all have do goals every day, and most of our life is driven by our do goals. But if you look at what Jesus tended to talk about in loving others, they weren't do goals. If you read the entirety of what he writes about, it's about how we are as people, what kind of person we want to be. And Jack taught me this powerful principle of focusing on what kind of person I want to be and not worrying so much about the do goals, and the do goals tend to take care of themselves because we're already driven that way. All of our propensity goes there anyway. And so in our company, we actually rate people on both the do goals and the be goals. So there's in our employee evaluation, it's a 2x2 matrix. And on the vertical axes, it's our do goals, profit, margins, cash flow. On the horizontal axis, it's our be goals. And those are the 7 words of love. Are we being patient? Are we being kind? Are we being forgiving and trusting and truthful and dedicated? That's really powerful that we think about it. And we actually give the best raise to the person who's doing both well. If you're doing both poorly, you won't be with us very long. And if you're doing one or the other, we try to work with you until you are a senior leader and do both well. And it creates an incredible culture. But more importantly to me, and for all of you in this room, the way it transformed my life is that first 20 years in the car industry, I was all about do goals. I was all about that ambition and achieving. And I did a pretty good job of it. But I was very disenchanted and felt very empty. Since I've come to Hershen Entertainment and Jack's taught me about B goals, every morning when I do have, well, not every morning, but when I do have quiet time, I look at those B goals. I want my B goals to love God, love others, what Jesus asks us to do. And every morning I look at those 7 words of love, the same 7 words we teach at our work. And that's how I want to be. And it has transformed my sense of contentment like nothing ever has. And so I encourage you, if you feel that relentless wheel of life and the busyness of it and the emptiness of the chase, maybe you should think about the B goals. And for me, personally, it all stems from a relationship with Christ. It comes from his number one commandment, which is to love God and love others. And if we're not doing that day in and day out, we're not achieving his number one objective and his number one commandment. So let me close with this thought. You know, for 20 years in the car industry, I thought that leadership was only about the bottom line. And I think only is the wrong word in that sentence. Leadership is about the bottom line. And we have to worry about it. But it's the bottom line and caring about other people, about loving other people. For me, it's about the bottom line and being the same person at home and at work and at church. And for me, personally, it's about hitting the numbers and exercising my faith and integrating my faith in the workplace. So I challenge you, I encourage you, as you go back to your offices today, think about what we talked about this morning. Think about unselfishness. Who do you need to be unselfish with? Think about kindness. Who can you be encouraging to? Who needs that thank you note? Who do you need to be truthful with? Who has to have that tough conversation with you or others? And think about being dedicated. Think about B goals and what you want to achieve in life from the kind of person you are, not just what you achieve. And there are, you know, there are three other words I don't have time to go in: trusting, patient, forgiving. But those are in the book, and you know, just for sake of time, I'm not going to hit them. But they're all covered very well in the book. It was held up earlier. We are going to sell it out back. But the important thing about the book that I want you to know is all the proceeds go to Share It Forward. All the royalties, any speaking fee I ever get, that all goes to that foundation to help those employees in need. And that's why we do it. But I encourage you, as you get out there today, think about leading with love. Think about that personal relationship with Jesus and what his command was to us to love others as he loved us. So thank you very much. You've been a tremendous audience. I really appreciate it. Thank you.